And I am Doug Keck, and welcome to the Catholic Sphere. You know, each week we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe with a different host and a different focus. This week our subject is theology. Our topic is the life and times of a deacon as we continue talking about the diaconate. Today we're again joined by Doctor and Director of the Office of the Permanent Diaconate in the Diocese of Birmingham. That is Deacon Christopher Roscoe. He joins us from our studios here in Alabama. We also have EWTN Theology Advisor Father Deacon Robert Klesko. He joins us from our radio studio. And finally, we are joined as always by EWTN's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan. He joins us from our theology studio. Welcome, gentlemen. It's always great to be back with you again. And of course, the last time we kind of talked in general about the whole idea of the diaconate, some of the differences, we wanted to delve into a little more of the history, the past, and where we are today, and possibly where we're going in the future. And since the diaconate, I kind of learned in the last show, is really was kept alive a little bit more probably in the Eastern Church, I'm going to start with Deacon Klesko to talk maybe about the history in the Eastern Rite of the diaconate.
Sure, happy to. So the East had maintained the diaconate as a permanent level of the hierarchy in time immemorial. And really the deacon's role, especially liturgically, along with the bishop and the priest, has always been central to the liturgies of St. John Chrysostom and St. Basil. But we also see throughout the history of the church, especially in the East, the importance of the deacon as an emissary, specifically of their local bishop. So I'm thinking specifically of the example of St. Athanasius at the Council of Nicaea. He attended that council as the personal theologian of the Patriarch of Alexandria as a deacon. And of course, we know St. Athanasius, his role at the Council of Nicaea was huge in terms of the formation of the Nicene Creed, which is the bedrock creed for all Christians. So in the East, the role of the deacon has always been a very important and close co-worker with the bishop, and it has produced many, many historical bits of theology throughout church history, and has really been a permanent and foundational aspect of ecclesiology in the East as well.
Right. Let me ask you, Deacon Roscoe, remembering growing up in kind of the pre-Vatican II era and that kind of thing, what was it when you first started hearing about the diaconate in the church post-Vatican II and your thoughts about it?
Yeah, so as we was in the 60s, obviously, and Vatican II began, people started talking about the ability of a married man to become a deacon or to serve in a different way in the church as an ordained deacon. And so that was a new idea growing up in the pre-Vatican 60s and serving Latin Mass, etc. It was kind of a new concept. It certainly was not something that I had ever really heard before or really even much understood. But then post-Vatican II, and particularly the United States in particular, the bishops in the United States very quickly after there was the statement in Lumen Gentium about the reestablishment of the permanent diaconate for the Western and the Latin Church, they very quickly petitioned Rome to ask for permission to be able to start forming permanent deacons in the diocese in the United States, and permission was given actually fairly quickly, and then the whole process began.
Right. I think based on some numbers from last year that was done by a study by CARA indicated there are about 10,244 permanent deacons in active ministry, at least in I believe in the Latin Rite Church. Let me ask you, Colin, again, that time period kind of Vatican II, and lay involvement was big. And, you know, some people would say, well, you know, but you're taking lay people and turning them into you know, kind of miniature priests, and so is that really getting the laity involved?
Well, Deacon Chris mentioned in the last program, the first program, how he first got started with lay ministry training, and this was a very common feature. Before you had the permanent diaconate, there was an effort to sort of find people to fill for the decline in vocations after Vatican II. Which was a problem. There were those priests who sought release from their vows so that they could marry and this kind of thing. And so lay ministry was sort of the start of that, and the diaconal programs came along and built upon that, and probably, as in his case, fed into that as well. And I think it does raise this question of a little bit of confusion, and I think the historical examples sort of clarify that. Things in the West that we sort of take for granted, we don't realize the historical meaning and function of them in the early church. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a good deal in the last program as well, that history. You know, so as far as any adult who is living, they know that, each of the cardinals in the church mm-hmm. is not just a member of the College of Cardinals, but that he has a rank. He's a cardinal bishop, he's a cardinal priest, or a cardinal deacon. And I don't think many people thought, well, what's a cardinal deacon? Oh, just right. a division of the College right. of Cardinals. But in reality, that had a real history in the church that parallels what Robert was saying about the Eastern Church as well. And that is that the bishop's deacon, as he was sometimes called, or also called an archdeacon, yeah. was a major functionary in diocese up until the Council of Trent. Mm-hmm. And that in the case of the election of the Bishop of Rome, and many, many places where the clergy elected the bishops, mm-hmm. in the election of the Bishop of Rome, the bishops in the surrounding sees, we would call them the suburban sees of the Diocese of Rome, and the priests of the churches in Rome, and the deacons of the seven divisions of Rome, which were the administrative divisions, and they had deacons over them. And we know this historically mm-hmm. from the case of people like St. Lawrence the Deacon. Mm-hmm. He was a martyr specifically because he was in charge of the economy of the diocese, and they wanted to get the treasures of the diocese, and he brought them the poor. Mm-hmm. And that was the only treasure that the Diocese of Rome had. But those roles continued even when they lapsed in the administratively and in other ways in the dioceses. And so when cardinals are given an electoral role in the college, mm-hmm. they're always given the honor of a title of one of the early dioceses, the suburban sees, or the diaconal divisions of the diocese, or deacons who served in the churches of the diocese. Wow. And so this again shows the consciousness in the West of the historical tradition, the theological tradition, but then the lapsing practically of that between the time of Trent and the Second Vatican Council.
Let me ask you a question about that. I want to get to the two deacons, but let me talk historically. You mentioned up until the Council of Trent, and we always think of Trent having to do with kind of like the church getting together to kind of deal with the Protestant Reformation, so to speak. Why did you think it changed then?
Well, some historians say it was because the deacons had too much power, which I guess deacons today probably wish that were true, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think there were a lot of forces. I think Deacon Robert had some things to say on that and how in the context of the Protestant Reformation, there was a reconsideration of what the role of the deacon should be.
Okay. Well, he handed it right off to you, Deacon Klesko.
Yeah, thank you, Colin. So interesting about the Council of Trent, actually one of the sessions of the Council of Trent, the president of that session was Cardinal Reginald Pole, who was an English cardinal. But at the time, he was only a deacon. This is back in the day when you could be appointed a deacon or appointed a cardinal and barely be, ordained. So he was a deacon and appointed a cardinal and then given presidency over the Council of Trent. But following the Council of Trent and really the church's struggle with Protestantism, mm-hmm. And especially in the 19th century, there's a very, very famous and influential biblical lexicon that was a product of a Protestant scholar that translated the word diakonia to mean servant. Mm-hmm. And so because of the influence of that particular biblical lexicon, they're kind of crept into the Catholic Church, this understanding of, well, the deacon is just kind of a servant, he does charity work, et cetera, et cetera. And so that kind of misshaped the understanding of the diaconate for quite some time. Now, of course, through good scholarship and continued conversations about the role of the diaconate, especially recovering the historical roots of the diaconate, the deacon as absolutely steward over the treasures of the church, but close co-workers and emissaries of their bishops. I mentioned the example of St. Athanasius. Colin mentioned the example of St. Lawrence. So we've got all these historical examples of the importance of the diaconal role, and especially in a variety of administrative functions, that now I think the church, the time is right for having good, renewed conversation about the role of the deacon going forward in the church.
Well, they may ask you, Deacon Roscoe, in that kind of thing. How do people view you? We mentioned this a little bit, I think, in the last show, in a sense of understanding your role and the things that you tend to do. Do people tend to see you from a liturgical perspective mostly, or mostly see you as someone who, you know, is helping with the fundraising or you know, the clothes drive?
In my parish, since I've been there such a long time, I think they probably do half and half, I would say. You know, certainly they recognize me from being on the altar every weekend. So there's that recognition of, oh, you know, I see you every Sunday or every Saturday when I'm at Mass. But then also as we work in the parish and as we perform our duties in the diocese, people begin to say, oh, aren't you involved with formation, or aren't you involved with the diocese, or aren't you involved with the charitable works that we do out of St. Peter's? And the answer is yes. So that perception, that understanding, that vision of who the deacon is sort of evolves over time. But the first impression is always, oh, you're on the altar. That's what you do.
So let me ask you this question. So you're in your parish, and somebody says, well, how come you get to preach? How come sister doesn't get to preach? Or, you know, there's a guy I know, he's involved with one of the ministries. He's a really good preacher. How come he isn't allowed to preach during Mass?
Well, that's a great question, because I think for most people, their understanding of the function of a deacon as well as of the priest, it's a great privilege and it's a great blessing that's given to the priest or to the deacon as a result of their ordination, as their participation in the sacrament of holy orders. So I think when people say that, people say, well, how come you get to preach and I don't? The simple question is because the bishop gives me permission to, and he doesn't give you permission to do that. But that's kind of glib, but it's really more important. Well, because after the formation process, just like a priest is formed, seminarians don't preach, but once they're ordained, then they are given not only the faculty, but the charism to preach because of the gifts of the ordination, of the graces that are associated with the ordination. We had recently had Father Matthew come and speak to our formation class of deacons. And he talked about the call of the first deacons. And he emphasized the point that these men weren't just waiters. I mean, you know, the early apostles currently could have assigned that to other people.
Right,
but these
right.
seven, had they laid their hands on them and prayed for them in a special way. And it was that laying on of hands that indicated that these men were more than just administratively to clean the tables or to wash the dishes, but to really participate in a special way in what they were doing. And that role has continued on in that laying on of hands by the bishop.
Right. Deacon Klesko, same kind of question. Have you run into that, or is it just much different?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that the three levels in the hierarchy of the church, bishops, priests, and deacons, are three expressions of the one priesthood of Jesus Christ, right? In reality, there's one priest, and that's Jesus Christ. That role of Christ's priesthood being made present in the church is played out in the episcopacy, the priesthood, and the diaconate. And so all of those roles, just as Christ himself made the fatherhood of God present, right, in his incarnation and most supremely through his cross and resurrection, so those three levels in the hierarchy of the church, bishops, priests, and deacons, make the fatherhood of God present and active, right? And so in the East, in particular, people call me Father Deacon. And I get kind of weird looks from Roman Catholics when I say I'm Father Deacon Robert. Mm-hmm. They kind of go, what's that about? But it's that the deacon has a role to play in making that fatherhood present. He's a father to his community in his own diaconal role of service. And so I think that's important to remember as we consider the sacrament of holy orders and specifically the diaconate as a level in that sacrament. And that's why the church has said for time in memoriam that any ordained ministry is occupied by a male, right? And John Paul II taught definitively on that on the priesthood. And the episcopacy, but it certainly is true for the diaconate as well. And so when you get people kind of going, oh, well, you know, you preach and you do these little things. Well, why can't Johnny or Billy or Susie do that? Mm-hmm. Well, it's a matter of, number one, we've been called from the community, number one. Number two, we've been ordained through the laying on of hands and given that special grace, right? It's not just a task that we've been assigned. It's a grace that we've been given.
But let me ask you, Colin, going on to the historicity and the ordination, and what makes it special because it's ordained? Why do you think the early church decided to make the deacon something that was laying on of hands? Because, of course, today we hear, talk about the women diaconate, and then there's discussion about in the early church there were women who were, quote, unquote, deaconesses. So explain.
Sure. Yeah.
That whole idea of ordination and the limitation to the male that it was indicated by Robert.
Well, in and of itself, as a Greek word, it means a kind of a service. And so there can be different kinds of services also. We know historically that in the case of the baptism of women, which was very often done by full immersion, there was the clothing with the garment and all of that. It's a very intimate sacrament, you might say. Mm-hmm. And so women assisted in that, but they weren't ordained for that role. They may have acquired the title of deaconess in by similarity to the ordained deacon. But I think the most important point is the one that Robert makes, and that is the question of authority. You know, Christ came into the world to be an image of the Father. He even says to Philip, if you've seen me, you have seen the Father. And he established the apostles, the presbyterate, and ultimately the church discerned the necessity of the diaconate. All of these as expressions of the Father to the body of the rest of the church, the members of the church. It's to that extent, it is a bridal relationship, Christ and the church. And the paternity, spiritual or natural, of a man expresses that. Sadly, we live in a confused age where we don't understand that male and female are in some way an image of God, an expression of God, and how that is to be lived out in the world. Nor do we understand that, this point has been made a number of times in the show, mm-hmm. we don't understand that the diaconate is more than a task. The sacramentality of the diaconate is connected with the male body as distinct from the female body. And the role of the man and the woman, this bridal relationship that is expressed naturally in marriage, is expressed in the union of Christ and the church, and ultimately in the Trinitarian communion, as Pope John Paul II preached many, many times on this divine image and reflection in human nature. But we've lost all of that, and we can't understand it, and we reduce it to what's been called a task or a function that people do. Mm-hmm. But it's that someone that looks like Christ, that represents Christ, who represented the Father, stands before me, and with an authority, with a natural training that mm-hmm. capacitates him for that task. And the authority from Christ through the apostles to do that task, he can do that those functions. Mm-hmm. Others can do those functions quite well. But he does it with authority, and that is a distinction that we've lost because we've frankly lost the idea of what human nature is and what man and woman are.
Right. Well, we tend to look at functionality as being the most important thing.
Exactly.
Deacon Chris, let me ask you, in your experiences, do you find that as being an ever-increasing question about women deacons or deaconesses? Or do you find that actually a lot of that has subsided? What's your own experience?
I think that there has been the rise and fall of that concern or that question about can women be ordained deacons. It seemed to be a little bit more pressing, or at least a little bit more common in the most past 3 or 4 years. It seems to have died down a little bit. I don't know, at least in my parish and certainly the circles that I move in down here, mm-hmm. that becomes a big issue or a major issue. And certainly, with the statements and the studies that are being done by Pope Francis and the Synod Fathers, you know, kind of bringing that up as a potential area for discussion with Rome, I think everybody's just sort of waiting to see what Rome will decide, what the Pope and will decide as far as going forward. But as Deacon Robert said, St. John Paul II spoke pretty authoritatively about, you know, the ordination of women.
Let me go back to you, Colin, as the, as our resident theologian here as well, along with Robert. But the idea of, you know, some have talked about the idea, well, what you can do is go back to that old deaconess concept and say, well, you can create this kind of deacon position for a woman, but it's not an ordained position. Is that something that seems to be out there?
I would say so. I think it was interesting when Pope Francis first came in and he was, there was a meeting of women religious in Rome. It might have been in his first year or two. He made the point, as he said, he always thought of the religious women as the deacons because they did all of these holy works. They cared for the poor. They taught the children. They did all of the things that could potentially comprise a diaconal office. And they did it. They did it without the title, and they did it without the ordination. I think that's still his point of view. Mm-hmm. I think what is likely to happen, if anything happens in this area, would be some reestablishment of this as a ministry. Mm-hmm. And so we have the ministries of acolyte and lector. They're not considered ordained orders as they were previously. We have ministries of catechist. We have ministries of this, that, and the other thing. There could be a female ministry that does some things that are similar to the diaconate that wouldn't make them deacons. It would make them servants, and I think there could be a role for that. And in that, to that extent, it would be, you know, it would be similar perhaps to what was done in the early church, without crossing a boundary, which seems. Every study to date has said, and there have been two by the popes over the centuries, over the last decades actually, say that all the data points to the fact that women were not ordained to the diaconate. And I think that will stand and something else will possibly be created, which would be an office that might have the name.
Right.
Personally, I think that's just satisfying an interest group, but then I'm not at the head of the church or any of the hierarchical.
And unfortunately, it's one of those things that the nuances get lost on the laity, and it can lead to a lot of confusion. Let me ask you, Deacon Klesko, in the Eastern Rite. Now, obviously, I indicated about 10,000 plus permanent deacons. Are there fewer permanent deacons? In your right, is that a function of the number of people, or are there usually fewer because of the kind of function they take at the liturgy?
Yeah, well, being as the Eastern churches are much, much smaller than the Roman Catholic Church, there are fewer deacons by number, just by natural consequence of math. However, the Divine Liturgy itself, when served only by a priest, looks awkward. Because there are parts that historically have always been done by a deacon. Mm-hmm. And so each Eastern Catholic parish, I'm thinking especially Eastern Catholic parishes that use the Byzantine Rite, liturgy properly celebrated is with a priest and a deacon. And so I know of some parishes that do not have a deacon. Most of our parishes have 2 to 3 deacons. Mm-hmm. And parishes that do not presently have a deacon are really working hard to get a deacon for the community, again, because of that continuity, just because of the structure of our liturgy, that it really makes much more sense with a priest and a deacon serving the liturgy.
Let me ask you, Deacon Chris, just we're talking about being accepted by the laity. The other issue over the years was being accepted by the priests themselves. How is that going?
Well, I think, again, as the permanent diaconate has grown and matured, particularly in this country, the role and the activities of the deacon are certainly more accepted by our priests, and particularly the younger priests. The younger priests who are being ordained and starting in their priestly life realize that there's a lot of work, there's a lot of activity, and to have a helper, to have an ordained minister who is ordained to assist the priest in the name of the bishop, that this gives them a really helping hand. And I think for the younger priests in particular, in our diocese, we have priests asking, do we have deacons who can come to my parish because there's a need, I need help, and there's a need that they can fulfill that.
Okay, well, we're going to start with you because we're wrapping up. What would you say to somebody out there who's thinking, well, maybe this is something I'm called to do. What should I do?
So I would say to anyone who inquires about what is it to be a deacon or what do I do, I give them two things. I say, first of all, really pray and ask God to help you discern, because I think, you know, the beginning is to hear the call of service, to hear the call of the Lord that is special to you and that you really feel this call to serve. The mm-hmm. second thing is to seek out an ordained either deacon or certainly your parish priest. Start talking to them, asking them, what is it that this is about? Do you think this is something I could do? Do you think, how do you see me as an individual? How can I know whether or not this is what God's calling me to do? So I give them those two things. I say, pray and discern, and talk to a deacon or a priest. And then finally, if you're married, talk to your wife, but that's a little bit further down.
Okay, same question for you, Deacon Klesko.
I would say, have people in my community said, hey, you have the disposition to be a good deacon? Mm-hmm. Because those original deacons in Acts 6 were called out of the community to fill that need. So if people at your parish recognize you, that you have the qualities to make a good deacon, mm-hmm. then follow up on that, talk to a vocation director, of course, do everything that Deacon Chris just said. But I think that's really important. That call from the community to fill that role is oftentimes the voice of God giving that invitation to a man to consider the diaconate.
Okay, Colin, you have 30 seconds to give us your insights from the church.
Well, I concur with what both my colleagues said, and that is to listen. Listen to God and follow that, even if it ends up being a dead end. As Mother always used to do, she would try something and then that didn't work. That was the God's judgment on that. And then she would try something else. And that's actually a good vocational approach as well.
Right, she used to say, going forward with the one foot in the air and a queasy feeling in your stomach, as we all know. So we thank you again. A great pleasure, Deacon Christopher Roscoe, Father Deacon Robert Klesko, and of course, Colin Donovan, for being with us today. As always, we thank you for joining us. And don't forget to join us next week with host Ryan Penny. He'll be discussing Catholics on social media, very important topics, right here on the Catholic Sphere on EWTN. We'll see you next time.